You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to Theater Geeks Anonymous. At this time, we ask that you turn off all cell phones. Unless, of course, you're using them to listen to this podcast, in which case, please keep it on. And please refrain from any flash photography, as it is dangerous to the performers of this podcast. Please be advised that this production may contain strobe effects, loud or sudden noises, nudity, and but probably not. And now sit back, relax, and enjoy the show.
Don't you see? It's so simple. Step one, we Google the biggest flops on Broadway. Step two, we find the crazy stories behind them. Step three, we see how they lose millions of dollars.
Millions?
Broadway isn't cheap. A lot of fancy people want to be producers. Step four, find out why the show won't go on. Step five, end this episode and head to Times Square.
Times Square? That'll never work. Only Broadway successes are in Times Square.
Oh, ye of little faith.
What a good vent. Felt good. It feels good to, like, talk it out, I guess, with like-minded persons, yeah. But also with a person that even if we don't share the same opinion, it's more of an education than like outwardly talking down someone. Right. Anyway, I'm depressed.
Bananas, guys.
We're living in a world right now.
I know. It's like the coronavirus, presidential
stupidity.
Like,
if I could say that.
Yeah, no.
Listen, we're in a state of emergency, so, like, there's this whole martial law thing going on, and who knows what's gonna, like, freedom of speech is gonna be one of the first things that they say, nope, nobody can talk bad about our president right now, and that's not a good place to be.
It's not.
It's not. So we just,
Pretty sure I've recorded on this podcast not nice stuff.
Well, that's because we did have freedom of speech then. We could say, we were grandfathered in. Oh, geez. So we just recorded the last episode that you heard, which was the mini-sode that we recorded on Sunday, March 15th. I feel like I'm talking from the future. It's the same date. We're going to record this full episode, but we just had this nice little interlude where we talked about all of the horrible things that are going on in this country and in this world, and it just made me a little depressed. So, let's talk about theater.
Yeah!
Welcome!
It's a full episode, guys! Oh, what's up? Gosh. We're actually going to talk about our show this time.
This is going to be amazing. Although, I did warn you that the show that I picked did not have anything on Wikipedia.
Well, check.
We're going to get there. It's not going to be the same format that it normally is. It's going to feel a little scattered, but it will get all the information out there.
Okay.
It is a kind of exciting episode. I'm excited to share. So this show was called Censored Scenes from King Kong.
So weird. I don't even know what this is about. This is so weird. I mean, probably censored scenes. From King Kong, probably.
The thing is, when you put that on the list, that show was available to do, I thought, no, certainly that's not a Broadway show. Maybe she just wrote that down. It was a mistake, or she copied and pasted wrong.
It was a show.
It was a show. On the Broadway.
Yes.
And I'm more confused, I think, than... than anybody.
And she did the research.
And I did the research. So I've got a couple of sources. One of them was actually one of the forums on BroadwayWorld.com.
Oh, cool.
Which is really cool. And I'm excited to share that information because it's like firsthand account of someone that actually saw the show and what his thoughts were. I've also got American Theater, A Chronicle of Comedy and Drama, 1969 to 2000 by, the name is, it's not going to let me. Thomas something. Shoot, let me see if I can. Sorry. Well, I was prepared. Well, anyway, okay, so in another book was The Complete Book of 1980s Broadway Musicals by Dan Dietz.
Okay.
And then another source was Broadway Plays and Musicals, Descriptions and Essential Facts.
Ooh, that sounds interesting.
Yes. Oh, this is the same same writer. So Thomas S. Hishak.
Okay.
Who also did the American Theater, A Chronicle of Comedy and Drama of 1969 to 2000.
Awesome.
Okay. So I'm just going to read from you from that first source that I mentioned.
Sorry, I was making sure it was still blue.
It is blue. It is. Yes, thank you. Blue meaning the microphone that is plugged into the computer right now because Puddle keeps walking past it and knocking it away. Because he's great. So, censored scenes from King Kong was a British import billed as a comic extravaganza, but it did not take audiences long to realize they were facing one of the most tedious of the season's short-lived disasters. Howard Schuman's comedy was set in a tacky 1930s-style nightclub in present-day London, where investigative journalist Stephen was his name, but the actor who played him was Stephen Collins, who played the father in Seventh Heaven.
Oh.
Isn't that fun? This was, by the way, I guess I should say this because it's gonna bring it about, but I didn't actually say it out loud. So this show was set to open on March 6th, 1980.
Okay.
And I've got more information on that later. Okay. But so when it says present day, what it means is the 1980s, okay. I guess.
Yeah.
Set in a nightclub in present-day London where investigative journalist Stephen has come from Tokyo because he's searching for the truth regarding classified information. It seems that the old film King Kong contained information for secret agents, but the pertinent scenes were cut before the movie was distributed in Europe. At the club, Stephen encounters tough proprietor Benchgelter, who was played by Chris Sarandon.
Oh, wow.
I know, of
Princess Bride.
What else did he do that I can't think of anything he's done right now.
IMDb
but
to remember.
There you go. And his piano player, Walter Wilma, played by Edward Love, who echo Bogey and Sam in Casablanca. So they're the kind of, yes. Carrie Fisher.
It's bananas.
I know. And Alma Cuervo, who performs some ludicrous songs and a variety of shady characters, all played by Peter Reigert. I'm sorry, that was the end of a sentence. Let me go back and read that again since I interrupted myself so often. At the club, Stephen encounters the tough proprietor Benchgelter and his piano player Walter Wilma, and the singing and dancing Fantucci sisters played by Carrie Fisher and Alma Cuervo, who perform some ludicrous songs and a variety of shady characters, all played by Peter Reigert. The reviews were vehemently negative.
Wow.
I know. I don't think I've ever heard the word vehemently describing the criticisms of a show before.
I know.
Examples are A Lousy Evening, The Worst! And, yeah, I know. They were vehemently negative, and the annoying venture closed after 5 showings.
They even called it an annoying venture?
Yeah.
I feel bad for
those. That was Thomas saying that. And the annoying venture was then. Like, that was his words, not critics. But I'm sure maybe that was in there somewhere.
Them.
Totally. So the Princess was the theater that was in. What is the Princess now? Do you know? The Princess
Where
Theater?
Is it?
Where? It doesn't say in here. Oh. I might come up on it later on. I think I do come up on it.
If you know the streets, I could say.
It doesn't say it in here. It does say that it used to be the 22 Steps Theater, if that helps you at all. It didn't for me.
No.
And I should have looked that up, and I didn't. But that's okay. Okay, so... Yeah, so five showings.
And so those were previews. It never made it to open.
No, it did have those were the opening five shows, and it closed. So they did have previews, and I think I've got...
That was opening night.
Right, exactly. So March 6th,
closed opening 1980, night.
Then it had five shows, then it closed. I know, craziness. Wow. So now I'm going to switch over to the other book written by Thomas Hishak.
Because you're like Carrie Fisher was.
I know.
I mean, well, that was 2 seconds after Star Wars.
Yes. Although, and I wonder, was Star Wars not as popular when it first came out in 78?
I think it was. They had three.
I thought it was too.
Yeah. Like Princess Leia was a big deal.
So
like,
it should have been a big
lot of
deal.
Dudes had
right.
Her photo up on their wall. Like,
yeah.
She was a big deal. I mean. Gosh. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess it's true, though. Like, even if you have a star in your show, if people don't like the show,
yeah.
Even if they really like one actor,
mm-hmm. You might get some audiences,
yeah.
Some audience members, but not a whole lot.
And everything counted on reviews so much more than it does now. Like, nowadays, you can get a bad review and still people will come to see it.
Yeah. Because nobody believes those reviews anymore. Right. They're like, oh, come on. I'm sure you're just saying that because you wanted to be an actor, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's the same author. So it does echo a little bit of what I just read in the other one. But there is a little bit more information, just slightly. Comedy by Howard Schumann, Princess Theater, five performances. It's in a tacky London night. Oh, I said echo, and echo is the one in the bedroom.
Oh,
sorry about that.
So
I don't know
funny.
If you guys heard that or not, but...
I heard something. I thought it was people in the hall.
I did, too. Anyway, back to it. So in a tacky London nightclub, investigator Steven runs across a bunch of shady characters while looking for cutscenes from the movie King Kong that contain pertinent information for secret agents. And that was basically it. It says the British spy spoof had found success in London, but the Broadway version was berated by the critics as tedious, annoying, and unfunny.
So London loved it, America hated it.
Yes, but there's a difference.
Okay.
So Howard Schumann wrote this. Initially, he wrote it for a televised version in London in 1973, I believe. I have that information somewhere as well. Like I said, this is a little scattered because I didn't write it out in a format like I normally do because there wasn't a huge amount of information. So I was pulling from a lot of different sources. But... his televised version was actually much better received than the Broadway version was. It's essentially the same show. It did give a little bit more information when it was giving the scenario of the televised version, which leads me to believe either that it was changed slightly for Broadway or that whoever was writing the stuff about the Broadway didn't think that it was important to include those little details. One of those details was that Steven, who's the investigative reporter, woke up in Tokyo after being in a coma for a while, thinking that he was still fighting in, I guess, the Vietnam War.
Mm-hmm.
So he is... still at war in his own mind, and he's looking for any excuse that he can find for, you know, to looking for the enemy everywhere he can. So that's basically why he's like, no, I heard about these scenes in King Kong that had been deleted. I bet those scenes have secret spy information, and if I can find those, then I'll know who the enemy is and I'll know what my next assignment is. It's like a kind of a psychotic break almost thing, which is actually kind of a neat idea.
Yeah.
But I think that they just didn't play well. I think a lot of the London people said it's too campy and American, and the American audiences didn't think it was funny.
Yeah.
So you just had kind of a disconnect.
I'm like, why? That sounds like I would watch it on like Amazon Prime or something as like not as a musical.
Right.
You know, no music. It doesn't sing. to me?
Well, it's a play with music.
Okay.
So it is slightly different from a musical.
Like, out the music. Yeah. Just make it like.
Well, I think the music is supposed to fit in like the any kind of nightclub or bar scene in a movie where you've got some music kind of playing through. The Fantucci sisters are the two, like Alma Cuervo and Carrie Fisher are the Fantucci sisters, who are a vaudeville sister act. So it does lend itself to that kind of thing, but it's not really necessary. I don't know. I mean, I think it does have a potential, as long as you know how to tell it.
Yeah.
Because you know what I say a lot is a good story is a good story is a good story.
Yeah.
And that is true. I still stand behind that altogether. But there is also so much in the editing process that makes a story well told.
Right, right.
So maybe that's what was missing here.
Yeah.
So this one is the 1980s... Complete Book of 1980s Broadway Musicals, written by Dan Dietz. So this one has a little more actual information. Censored scenes from King Kong, also known as a comic extravaganza, played at the Princess Theater, and the opening date was March 6, 1980, closing date March 9th, 1980, after five performances. It says play and lyrics, so I imagine that just means the book and the lyrics. I've never seen it written out like that before, play and lyrics.
Maybe that's because it's British.
Maybe.
Because most of the stuff we've done has, I think we only did like maybe one or two things.
Rocky Horror.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. Okay, that might be it.
Yeah.
So play and lyrics by Howard Schumann, who we've already mentioned. Music by Andy Roberts. Direction by Colin Buxey. Producers Michael White, Eddie Kulukundus.
Good grief.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Eddie. I just butchered your name. Choreographer David Taguri. Scenery Mike Porter. Costumes Jennifer von Meyerhauser. Oh, I wonder. My production stage manager for Phantom of the Opera was Peter von Meyerhauser. I wonder if there's any
connection.
Relation. Interesting. Lighting, Richard Nelson, and musical direction is not credited.
I don't know why. That's weird.
I know.
That's a huge part.
You'd think maybe Andy Roberts did it, but then why wouldn't it have been credited? Right. That's weird. I wish there was more information. Like, I wish that I could have found the juicy details. Oh, well. So the cast, some of them I mentioned. Stephen Collins played Stephen. Nikki Myholz.
How is it spelled?
M-I-E-H-O-L-E-S. Mm-hmm. Myholz.
Yeah.
Maybe in the 1980s that didn't sound so dirty.
Probably. Yeah.
It's also real late right now, so. Sorry. Sorry, not sorry. He played the voice, or she, I'm assuming it's a man, though, played the voice of the producer. Mm-hmm. Pete Flasher was the voice of the author. Mm-hmm. Peter Reigert played S.K. Vogel and S.L. Vogel. Sauvage Cigar, Vincenzo Chiarugi. Those characters were all played by Peter Reigert. The Fantucci, I was saying Fantucci, it is not. It's the Fantuccini sisters, played by Carrie Fisher, played Iris, and Alma Cuervo played Deborah. Chris Sarandon played Bench Gelter. Edward Love played Walter Wilma. The play with music was presented in two acts. The action takes place in London during the present time. Musical numbers included Act 1, and there's not very many, so I'm just going to say them all. Act 1 had Hacha, Banana Oil, He Ain't Scared of Nothing,
Banana Oil.
And Act 2 had number 1, Soft Shoe Freak, The Other Side of the Wall. So it was not very many. And that's why it, and the names of the titles led me, that's why it was like, I think they were just kind of during the show, here's the song that we sing during our show, and then we'll do the action afterward. I'm not taking you out. All right. So the work advertised itself as a comic extravaganza, but as far as the critics were concerned, Howard Schumann's play with songs, censored scenes from King Kong, offered little in the way of comedy. and with one set and six-member cast, along with pre-recorded music and an offstage piano. One assumes the word extravaganza was used tongue-in-cheek. Along with Heartaches of a Pussycat and Bruce Forsyth on Broadway, which has an exclamation point, that's why I said it like that, which had opened during the previous summer, Censored Scenes was the shortest-running musical of the season. The show had first been seen in the Edinburgh Festival in 1977 and was followed by a London production at the Open Space Theatre on October 21, 1977. A few years prior to its stage premiere, the work was reportedly filmed by the BBC with a cast that included Julie Covington, but the network later declined to telecast the production. Interesting. It appears the film has never been shown publicly, and along with the 1929 film version of The 5 o'clock Girl, may well be the only film version of the play to be shelved upon completion and never released. That's interesting because some of the stuff that I read were people that had seen
the film version.
The film version. So it's never been televised, so I imagine it's got to be somewhere. Yeah, it has to be. All the action took place in The System, which is a tacky London nightclub where former journalist Stephen is investigating the rumor that cut scenes from the 1933 film of King Kong contained coded and secret information for German agents during the years before World War II. As a result, the spies had to wait for Son of Kong in order to ascertain if that film might contain more secret information, or maybe the deleted scenes had nothing whatsoever to do with politics and were instead coded messages for an international dope ring. The plot wasn't any too clear.
Oh, man.
And the critics weren't entirely certain what the play was about. But Joel Siegel on WABC TV 7 was sure there ain't no Nazis in the story, and the only international dopes were the ones who brought the play to Broadway.
Oh, man.
So this will kind of go into the synopsis a little bit.
Okay.
At the club, Stephen meets the System's owner, Bench Gelter, and the club's black piano player, Walter Wilma, mm-hmm. both of whom brought to mind another movie, Casablanca. Mm-hmm. Among the club's menagerie are Iris and Deborah, two singers and dancers who hope to make it in the in show business, as well as a trio of mysterious characters, all played by Peter Reigart. In what is in what is perhaps a pre-producer's homage, one of Reigart's roles was that of Sauvage Sagar, a collector of King Kong memorabilia. He's unable to walk without the help of canes, and at one point he tosses sand on the stage, clicks his metal canes in place, and proceeds to go into a mean soft shoe. The headline of Douglas Watt's review in the New York Daily News said to drop it off at Empire State Building because the show was a disaster and a god-awful mess with dumb songs.
Yeah.
He didn't pull any punches. That's actually kind of really hilarious. I'm going to read that again because this is kind of, this is unheard of. Nobody would ever have written that nowadays.
No.
I don't think so.
No.
The headline. This is the headline.
That's bananas.
Of Douglas Watt's review in the New York Daily News said to drop it off at Empire State Building because the show was a disaster and a god-awful mess with dumb songs.
That's the headline. Wow.
Siegel said the evening had no material, only remnants. His television review included a snippet of one of the show's songs, and he noted it. It was one of the six worst songs ever performed on a Broadway stage, and warned that the other five were in the show, too.
Man.
Oh, my lordy. I'm sorry
How
that I'm laughing.
How did they get this money? Because when you have to do these workshops...
Yeah. Well, this was different. I mean, this was the 80s. So I feel like it was a different process back then. And he had this... by all accounts, kind of successful run in London, mm-hmm. and he had had it televised, and although it wasn't accepted, he had a name. Howard Schumann was
right.
was a person that wrote
musical.
Stuff.
Yeah, shows, yeah.
So, Dennis Cunningham on WCBS TV 2 said the first act was confused. The first 20 minutes of the second were consistently zany, and then the remainder of the second act collapsed. As a result, it was impossible to go ape over.
Oh, man.
They're pulling out the puns.
Should have known these were coming.
I know, right? Mel Gusso in the New York Times noted that the evening was sparse on laughs and about as spectacular as a cocktail piano. The show was as whimsical as it was witless, and it was sub Monty Python in its comedy. He mentioned that one line spoken by Carrie Fisher summed up the entire evening. What a load of banana oil.
Oh, man.
That's the line.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com.
The Princess Theater, which was no relation to the fabled theater on West 39th Street that had seen the premieres of a series of so-called princess musicals by Jerome Kern, was demolished in 1955. That was all parenthetical, by the way.
Okay.
The Princess Theater had been the site of a popular nightclub in the Latin Quarter. The venue was located at Broadway and West 47th Street. Any idea if there is even still a theater there?
Yeah. Wait, I'm trying to think of what's on the 47th and Broadway.
Oh, wait, let me read more because now it says some more that may shed some light here. Let's see. The venue is located at Broadway and West 47th Street, once the spot of the closed nightclub in the Latin Quarter. The space eventually deteriorated into an X-rated movie house, but was briefly resurrected as a traditional theater known as 22 Steps when Coquelico opened in February 1979. The theater was so named because one had to ascend 22 steps in order to reach the auditorium, which was located on the second floor of the Midtown building. The venue is generally considered as both a Broadway and off-Broadway house, but it appears most, if not all, of its productions were under a middle or limited Broadway contract. The theater seated only 450 patrons, but except for an occasional opening night, it's unlikely the venue ever enjoyed a sold-out performance. I'm wondering if that's the theater where, like, the Fantastics was for a long time.
Right, that's called the Theater Center. And it has, like, multiple theaters inside of it now. I'm going
to
look.
Because it does the perfect crime, too.
Yeah.
And I know you have to go upstairs to get to the auditorium there.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. You look that up, and I'm going to keep reading. In 1980, the theater was renamed The Princess, but by 1984, it reverted to its original name, The Latin Quarter. The final show to play there was Charles Strauss Mayer. Maybe I should just keep reading this, and we'll get all the information that we need. I always do that. The final show to play there was Charles Strauss's Mayer, which transferred from off-Broadway in 1985. In 1989, the building that housed the theater was demolished, and today a hotel stands on the site. Sorry, there you go. There's your answer.
What?
It doesn't say which hotel.
Okay.
But Broadway and West 47th Street would probably have a couple. Clive Barnes in the New York Post commented that the theater season would be hard-pressed to outmatch in horror the little number called Censored Scenes from King Kong. The headline of his review read that Kong was more to be pitied than censored. Ooh.
Rough, man.
I know.
These are rough.
Yeah.
I'm not used to that.
Yeah, nobody's pulling punches on this one.
Jeez, O.P.
After this debacle, he suggested the Princess Theater should be called the Duchess Theater, or perhaps even 21 Steps, because no theater is quite the same after an experience like this. Besides the six songs heard during the evening, Irving Berlin's There's No Business Like Show Business was sung by Carrie Fisher. Why?
Like, I didn't even know she was a singer.
Well, I mean, her mom is Debbie Reynolds.
I know, but I've never seen her.
But she's not, I mean, that's not what her bread and butter was, yeah. certainly. But also the timing wasn't, like, she grew up in a time where maybe movies were more accessible to her anyway. I don't know that she, I don't know. I've never heard her sing. Barnes trusted that ASCAP is arranging for Berlin to receive royalties because why should anyone suffer? Oh, Lordy. The critic also noted that during the entire 1979-1980 season, one show would no doubt claim a gold medal for being unutterably awful.
Good grief.
Stupendously bad and pitifully dismal. And he clearly believed censored scenes from King Kong had a good chance for winning that award. Wow.
So, like, maybe we should have, like, a Razzies for theater.
Mm. The floppies.
The floppies. That's excellent.
I think I'd want to win one, though, with a cute name like that.
The floppies.
I want a floppy, Mom.
So funny.
So now I'm going to skip back to what I wrote out, which is going to be the most scattered, because it was just information that I was pulling from here and hither and thither. But the first part of this is going to be from that forum that I spoke about on BroadwayWorld.com.
Oh, I just wanted to say, like, I saw two hotels. So the and then at the other corner across is the Olive Garden, and there's a hotel in there, too.
Okay. I guess it would be the one that would be built in the 1980s. Do you think that's the Olive Garden one?
That's where the... Well, now it's called the Renaissance Hotel. It might have been called something else back then.
Interesting. Yeah. Interesting. Mm-hmm. So there was a forum that was just censored scenes from King Kong where mm-hmm. someone was like, has anyone seen this musical? I'd love to hear about it. And so there were a lot of people that were bringing up title of show. At first I had no idea why. Except that there is a song in title of show where they mention all of these Broadway flops, and they happen to mention censored scenes from King Kong in that musical number. So all of these TOS people came out of the woodwork for this forum, and I was just like scrolling through going, come on, give me some real stuff. And then I found it. Scott Briefer mm-hmm. is his... alias.
Okay.
Not really, because it's his actual name. But he posted this. This was posted back in 2008, November 16th, 2008. And he writes, it was bizarre but fascinating. It was about a code embedded into removable scenes from King Kong that when played would signal the military to take certain actions. It's many years ago, but I remember the play with music totally captivating.
Oh, wow.
He said it was episodic in structure with many short scenes and clever yet economical sets. I remember loving it. Now, I was confused by this.
Yeah.
Because after having read all of these really very bad reviews.
Yeah, really terrible.
Then to come across the guy that was sitting in the audience just as a regular Joe Schmo, just like me and, well, maybe not you and me, but, well, maybe, yeah, actually, because he seems like he would be the kind of guy that would just go and see whatever was playing. Mm-hmm. But just any normal New Yorker going to see their whatever new Broadway show there is, and he's loving it. So then Karen24, also on this forum, writes, also on November 16, 2008, this is a very long link, and I don't know if it'll work, but it's an excerpt from a book called The American Theater, and that's when I read.
Oh.
And it came up when I did a Google search. It was on the second page of the results. In summary, in case the link doesn't work, which it did, she just explains all of what I just read to you. I think it's, I mean, and that's not as interesting, actually, as what Scott Briefer wrote, because she wasn't actually in the audience, but then he was reminded of something by reading that review, and then he came back to say, oh my gosh, I totally remember that song. Mm-hmm. It made me feel fill in the blank, you know what I mean? And so, like,
so crazy.
But you know what? That's what theater is.
It totally is, because it's like, sometimes I feel like the critics get a hold of it, and sometimes audiences love it.
Mm-hmm. We've had a lot of shows on this, or a lot of shows that we've done on this podcast.
The audiences loved it, the critics didn't.
It was panned, and although it had a following, and it maybe even still continues to have a following, it couldn't go anywhere because the critics didn't allow it.
Yeah.
Interesting. So I already mentioned the musical numbers.
I've never heard reviews that bad on this.
Like, me neither.
Really. Wow.
So then I found by Michael T. Mooney on a website called papermoon4.tumblr.com. He writes, during the Broadway musical Title of Show, a song called Monkeys and Playbills mentions a myriad of Broadway flop musicals. Among the most obscure has to be Censored Scenes from King Kong, which opened at the Princess Theater on March 6th in 1980. More a play with music, the show was written by Howard Schumann, who had also done a film of the same name for the BBC in 1973. Schumann said he was inspired by seeing the line Censored Scenes from King Kong on the cover of Esquire magazine, a feature about those clips that were trimmed for re-releases, like the negative, like the native being stomped by King Kong, and of King Kong sniffing his fingers. Those were two of the scenes in particular. Mm-hmm. Schumann had staged a theatrical version in the UK to some success, mm-hmm. so a Broadway production seemed inevitable. The plot does indeed concern a modern-day investigative journalist coming to Tokyo, coming from Tokyo to London to track down the censored scenes, believing they excised clips contained secret messages for enemy agents. It was also a comedy. In fact, the show was subtitled A Comic Extravaganza, which is generally warning enough that it may not be. The cast was estimable even by 1980 standards. Carrie Fisher, Peter Reigart, Stephen Collins, Chris Sarandon. Critics savaged the show, saying it was a lousy evening. It was the worst. Associated Press started by saying, if this is what wowed him in London, then London should be arrested on drug charges. And ended with a warning that it was a sure cure for insomnia. That was the Associated Press. Clive Barnes went so far as to say that the princess, no theater is quite the same after an experience like King Kong. Not surprisingly, the show closed after 3 days and 5 performances. So I wish that I was able to find more information on this, because after reading the stuff that I did read, yeah. I wanted so badly to find more information. I even at one point considered reaching out to Scott Briefer.
Yeah.
I didn't, because I didn't have the time.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that would be an interesting thing. I don't know. Scott, do you listen to the podcast? I'd love to hear your thoughts. I might actually still reach out to him. I don't know if this was 10 years ago. It was 12 years ago. So who knows if he's even got the same. I've got a sneeze, but it's just a... excuse me, itchy
Bless
nose.
You.
Not the corona. I did it into my elbow. Excuse me. Thank you. It is interesting to get such a divide between, it was just one audience and several critics.
To hear from someone who saw shows.
Completely.
Like when Senator Joe, we did that one.
Yes.
He then came from the fact that I spoke to someone who had seen it and I'd never heard of that
yes.
show. So that's like really a lot of fun. So if you're listening,
if you were living in New York City in the 1980s,
and you
which
saw that
would have been difficult to begin with.
Yeah.
Good Lord. And you saw, hey, I would even posit any show that you saw that ended up being a flop, you let me know, because we have a list going, but we can always add to it. Yeah. But that's fun.
That's so odd.
Yeah. Truly.
So odd.
It's an odd, because I was going to say it's an odd idea.
Yeah.
But it's not really.
Because, I would watch that as, like a kind of quirky, mm-hmm. like sort of PBS-y,
yeah.
BBC,
like an episode of Doctor Who,
right? Like that's how I would watch,
yeah.
like
with a little tongue in cheek,
yeah.
Like that's all it really needed to be,
that's,
and I think
I'd be down for that.
Yeah, I think the reason critics didn't like it as much is because it came off it was coming off as super campy, like
yeah.
American camp Broadway,
yeah.
But it was not funny enough to be in that genre. So, and also British humor is different from American
totally.
humor,
but they didn't, the British didn't like it. even.
Well,
so that
the British, it was an okay run in the UK.
Because didn't they say it was more American? Isn't that what
that
you
was
said?
The televised version.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know if that was the same or not.
Right. Okay.
But even that didn't, I mean, that wasn't not well received. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it just was what it was.
Right.
But British, and I love British humor.
Same.
It doesn't work as camp. And that's why it's funny, though.
Yeah.
Like, I don't like camp. I don't think it's funny. Or it's funny the first joke, and then after that...
You're just beating a dead horse.
Right. And I don't care about that. Like, yeah. I don't want to watch that. That's not funny to me. Mm-hmm. But there are definitely ways to make this a funny... Like, it would be comedic.
I feel like it shouldn't have been a stage show.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it would have been much better if it had been, like, what we were talking about.
Right.
Like, not a series, but one of those, like, hour and a half, 2 hour televised movie situations.
Mm-hmm.
And fine, you could still have, you know, music inside the club because that works for the story, but it doesn't need to be a musical. Like,
yeah.
The actors don't need to be singing. It could be just like, you know, and we pan over and hear part of a song.
Well,
and we, you know what I mean?
Like, I will say,
to create ambiance.
Honestly, when I was reading the synopsis about the televised version,
yeah,
where it says he woke up from being in a coma and didn't know where he was, and like
all a dream. That's like,
well,
a trope.
No, but I read it not as a comedy, but as like a Beautiful Mind kind of thing, where,
what?
You know, he is in a psychotic break, but
right,
he is totally and thoroughly convinced that all he needs to do is find these deleted scenes, and then everyone else will see, no, I promise,
right,
you know, these are the enemy. Like, we've got to do this otherwise. And everyone else is like, dude, World War II was 10 years ago.
Yeah,
like, get over it.
I love a psychological thriller.
Totally. And there can still be comedy. There can still be moments of humor.
Mm-hmm.
But... Yeah. I mean, like, if someone wrote it today.
Yeah. I feel like it is. You're right. It's a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think it was executed.
Correct. Yes.
Well, yes, of course, didn't see it. Neither of us were born then. No.
I was. No.
No, neither of us were born then.
I was. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure I wasn't.
No. So, you know, we didn't see it, but I feel it from what we can know, it just seems like it just, there's a place for it, but maybe the stage wasn't this place for that story to be told.
Right. Or just the way it was being
executed,
told wasn't.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, like, if you just think of, like, there are several different parts to a show.
Yeah.
You've got your venue, you've got your story, you've
right,
got your actors, you've right, got the direction. None of those things were in the same room. Like, it was a mismatch.
Yeah.
Like, they took the venue from that show, but then they put the director from that show in, and then they took the, you know, so it, just none
the
of it
hodgepodge
made sense together, and it, yeah. It's
also
interesting.
Also, did you say mismatch?
Mismatch with
okay,
an M.
Okay. It sounded like
I just
you said
need
mismatch.
Here, let me get some water. I was legit.
I was like, that's going to be a new word we use.
Mismatch. Actually, I kind of like it. Mismatch. I'm going to say mismatch from now on. I had my laptop in my lap, and I was holding on to my water bottle legit for 5 minutes while reading that, and I still never took a drink of water. So I was engrossed.
So
there we go.
Odd. That's all I can say about it. It's just so, so odd.
Yes.
But, like, fascinating.
Yeah, totally fascinating.
Yeah.
I was looking for, like, interviews with people, like,
and
some
I
of the actors.
There was a way to find that, what was recorded.
Yeah.
Like, I'm really wondering if the
there
Library
has to be
of
a
the
way.
Performing Arts has it, or...
Yeah. Well, I mean, it would be that it's the BBC that was going to televise it, so it would be somewhere in England. London.
Right. It's got to be some sort
it
of
has
archive.
To be.
I'd be really interested to watch that. As odd as it is, I just want to understand.
Mm-hmm. I just want to, like, email Chris Sarandon and be like, hey... What happened with this?
Yeah.
Like, tell me the actual tea.
But definitely reach out to the dude on Broadway World.
Oh yeah, Scott Briefer. I will.
If it's possible to find him on Facebook or whatever.
Maybe we'll do a little bonus
Does
ep.
Anybody know this person?
Who knows Scott Briefer? Yeah. That was, I mean, I'm assuming that his real name as well. It could just be his handle.
Right.
But it's S-C-O-T-T space B-R-I-E-F-E-R.
Okay.
That's his handle on BroadwayWorld.com. I know that that was in 2008, but I think that he also then returned in 2012 to put another little post on that same forum. Yeah. So it could be that he's still
active.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll have to look this up.
Be interesting.
It would be.
I love firsthand accounts.
Totally.
Of odd stuff.
Totally. Like when I did an interview with my friend who was in Rebecca and was like, I was just, man, finding out so much stuff on that. That was really cool. Rebecca. Yeah.
That just keeps taking turns, man. Oh, I forgot to talk about this on the minisode. Adela Holzer dying.
Oh, yeah.
So if you guys remember, it was Senator Joe, right?
Senator Joe.
If you guys remember back, this is a total aside. This has nothing to do with the King Kong music or show we just talked about. But if you guys remember Adela Holzer from the Senator Joe episode I did, this woman, I kept saying her life story was so much more fascinating than Bernie Madoff's. Mm-hmm. And it really, really was. And she was an embezzler. she did theatrical Ponzi schemes, basically. And she is one of the reasons why Senator Joe went down the way that it did. But like, her backstory is crazy. I tell all of it on the Senator Joe episode if you haven't listened to it. And she died in January. Mm-hmm. So she was in her early 80s. And I'm still very much like, I don't understand why, you know, the Lonnie Prices of the world haven't tried to make some sort of docudrama about her life. Because I think it would be way more interesting than the Wizard of Lies movie that's about Bernie, which was good. Don't get me wrong. I love Bobby D, guys. Not saying I don't love Bobby D. But, oh, man. I mean, that's like, that's a part that a woman would win an Academy Award for. It's real good. She was crazy. Who would play Adela Holzer? Goodness. You could maybe do a Judy situation. Not Judy, the Renee Zellweger one, like the TV movie one where you had two actresses play her at two different times, right? So you had like Tammy Blanchard and I forget the other woman's name. She's a majestic actress. What's her name?
I can't recall,
right now.
I think like a Jane Fonda could play the older.
Well, I would like her to be Latinx.
Okay.
Because that's what she was.
That's fair. That's fair. Give me some cheat. Oh, Rita Moreno.
Yes, when she goes to jail that last time in her 70s.
Yeah.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine? Especially when, like, there's that notorious photo of Adela Holzer in her mansion that's, like, been stripped of everything. Yeah. It's like, it would be like a Latinx Sunset Boulevard type situation because she's, like, lost her mind.
Yes.
And she's dressed beautifully, but, like, the government took everything. Oh, my goodness. You guys, I need someone to make this movie. I really do.
Let's do it.
Putting Let's it out there. It. Hopefully somebody will listen and want to do it. Man, so good.
Awesome.
Well thanks you for listening.
Yeah, thanks you for listening.
Thanks you. We're tired. It's been a long year.
It's only March.
I know, girl.
Oh,
it's
Lordy.
Been a long year.
It has been. Puddle has been not so patiently waiting to go out to go to the bathroom, so... Signing off.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Thank you for listening.
We'll hopefully get another episode out pretty soon.
Yeah.
So stay tuned. Stay tuned. Stay tuned. Stay tuned. I'm doing that while also playing with Puddle's ears. So it's a visual joke.
Bye.
All right. Bye, guys.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.